I'm Stuart Buchanan, and I'm in conversation today with forensic psychologist Kerry Danes, and we're here to sort of talk about the summer nights of crime on UK TV channel, really, that are coming up. And we've got some really interesting research here about why people love true crime stories. So I guess my first question to you, Kerry, welcome, by the way.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Why do you think there has been this rise in, not an obsession, but people loving true crime? There's been a lot of big TV shows recently. So where do you think it's coming from?
We are a nation of true crime fanatics. And I think it's because it's an extreme, isn't it? It's extremes of human behaviour. It's extremes of human emotion. And I know that when I first started thinking about a career in crime, we had 4 television channels and we had fictionalised detectives. You know, we had Sherlock Holmes, we had Cracker, that kind of thing. But these days we've got true crime documentaries which give us access like never before. So suddenly we're in the interview room with the police, with the suspects, and it's just compelling viewing. You can't possibly fail to be fascinated and gripped by it. So even for me, because you'd think that it's a bit of a busman's holiday for me to watch this kind of programming, you know, within 5 minutes I'm in there, you know, I'm in the mix with them.
So you really enjoy watching this kind of stuff when you're at home as well.
I've got to be in the right mood for it because I've got quite a bit of crime in my day-to-day life. But I think that true crime documentaries done well, and I've been able to look at some of the episodes that are going out over the Summer Nights of Crime series, and they get you in the feels. And I think that if you emotionally connect to something, and I think that we do emotionally connect to reality, because not only have we seen the rise of true crime documentaries, but we've seen a general rise, haven't we, in reality TV programmes.
People like the sort of human aspect of it. You know, when you're watching a drama, for example, there is a kind of, obviously, when they're done well, you still have that emotional connection. But there's still that little thing in the back of your head that says, this is fictionalised, it could go anywhere.
Exactly. It's a disconnect. And you know that it's been written, and you know that there's going to be a resolution at the end that's going to be, you know, that kind of fairy tale resolution that we all want, and everybody lives happily ever after. Whereas I think with the true crime stuff, you get a certain amount of resolution because you get to see the bad guy being caught and brought to justice. Yeah. But the justice isn't necessarily everything that you want it to be. But you're left with, oh my God, you know, the victims' families, what they've been through and what they will continue to go through. I think the fact that it's a real story, it just stays with you, doesn't it, for longer?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess one thing I wanted to know was how did you yourself get into forensic psychology? Where did that start?
Was there something that
you can look back on now and go, that was that moment? Where
I get asked this all the time, and I really need to come up with some sort of story. I need to make something up, but I'm going to tell you the truth of it.
Okay.
The truth of it is that a careers advisor told me to take psychology.
Oh, really?
Because I was good at English.
You don't often hear people saying my careers officer.
Yeah, I know.
Was
I was a good girl. I listened to the careers officer. Do you know what? I think she just made it up. I think she just plucked it out of thin air. But I was very bad at maths, very good at English, and for some reason she felt that psychology.
Yeah.
So I'd always planned to take psychology, and then I took law as a subsidiary at university, purely because I really fancied a boy that was in my law class. And I never actually got to speak to him. I never actually struck up the courage to have a conversation with him. But law obviously appealed to me.
Yeah.
And I started to think about, well, how can I put psychology and law together? Mm-hmm. Because they just seem to make sense. You know, the way I think seems to fit with this. Mm. And so I started to look into potential careers. Now, for me, as I've already said, we only had 4 TV channels.
Yeah.
So I wasn't inspired by true crime documentaries, but I read true crime books. I was a bit of a bookworm.
Okay. Yeah.
And again, I think it's that same appeal, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
I can definitely say that true crime books, I think, were the seed, the serious seed of where I thought, maybe this is what I want to do.
And that's where you went on from.
Yeah.
So just to move into this research that we've got here as well, for instance, we've got people who have watched true crime, their interesting careers in forensic science, detective investigative work. But one of the interesting things here was it seems to be more of a... more females, more women interested in true crime. Have you, I mean, as a psychologist, I have to ask, why do you think that is?
Well, psychology is dominated by females. Uh-huh. And also, believe it or not, forensic science is. So we've got lots of females.
Heavily so, quite heavily.
Yeah, quite heavily so. It depends, and it depends what area you're in.
Okay.
And also different countries. So Australia, there are loads of female forensic mm-hmm. scientists all out there solving crimes, which makes me very, very happy. And there's definitely an appeal to women.
Yeah.
Now, there are theories about why true crime documentaries appeal specifically to women. Mm-hmm. One of them is that women actually fear crime. And rightly so, because we're often the victims, of crime. And a lot of what we see on TV is male violence directed towards women.
Mm-hmm.
So why would we want to watch that? It seems masochistic in a way.
Yeah.
But in watching these programs, females feel that they're learning something.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, they're learning something that might help them be the victim of a crime.
Yeah.
And so it alleviates that anxiety, and because they get that resolution, so they get to see the perpetrator being caught and hopefully go through the criminal justice system and be locked up. Mm-hmm. The end point. And that makes them think, well, actually, do you know what? The world maybe is a fair place. There are more people out there who want to solve this problem than there are who want to be violent to us.
To be the problem themselves as well.
Now, I don't know whether that's a little bit of overanalysis, to be honest. Even Freud said sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. I think that women generally are interested in people. They're interested in humans, what drives humans, and human emotions. And crime stories have got all of that in abundance.
Exactly, yeah. And what we've seen here as well is actually 53% of people confess that their biggest love for these kind of things is the procedure behind it.
Yeah, police procedure. So the nuts and bolts of actually, how do the police take this problem? And often it might just be a report of a missing person. They don't even know that a crime has been committed.
Yeah.
And start to piece all of these jigsaw pieces together to create a story and find out what on earth went on. And do we need to find the missing person? Well, yes, we do. Do we need to find somebody that's done something terrible to somebody? Yes, we do. Do we need to find them in a timescale that's going to stop them from harming somebody else?
Yeah.
So how they go about it, the actual, the science of it, the skills of it, the procedure of it, it's really fascinating stuff. And even for me, because I'm not really involved in that, as a psychologist, I'll get involved in maybe advising the police on whether crimes should be linked together.
Of course,
are they, if we've got a series of rapes, have they been committed by the same person?
Similar kind of operation, similar kind of patterns in it. It's looking for that,
those kind of like behavioural tells that, we've got one or more people that are responsible for this type of crime. Or advising the police about how best to interview a subject, how to tackle their suspect in order to get the right kind of information from them in a timely fashion. Because often you've only got 24 hours in order to question somebody.
The custody thing is that you can only keep people in for 24 hours.
But I'm not involved with the nuts and bolts of forensics as such. I might read autopsy reports. I might look at crime scene pictures. I try and avoid it if at all possible because they're pretty traumatic.
Grim. Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, but the, blood spatter evidence, ballistics evidence, all of this kind of thing, I find just as interesting as the next person.
Oh, absolutely,
100%.
I know this is quite reductive, but if you have an average day at work, for instance, and I know you can't be too specific, obviously, with sort of details and things like that, but what, if you can, what is your average day like?
Oh, gosh, it's so difficult. What is an average day? There's no answer to that. I'm going to be honest with you. And I want to be honest for all of the people that are thinking that they might want to go into forensic psychology. My average day is writing reports and being knee-deep in paperwork, which doesn't sound that exciting. Actually, I don't know. I get really into my reports. Yeah, I just find them so fascinating that I get lost in them.
Buried in it, yeah.
Yeah, but more often than not, I'm spending time talking to people who have been through the criminal justice system.
Okay.
So much of my career has been spent in hospitals, secure hospitals, and it's been about rehabilitating people, or it's been about managing people that maybe can't be rehabilitated, mm-hmm. so they're no longer a danger.
Okay.
And that's actually exciting for me.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to sound like a Miss World contestant, but I do like to feel that I've got a purpose in life, and if I can make the world a safer place. So I like to think that I'm preventing somebody else becoming the victim.
Well, and it's helping people as well, isn't it? Because people go through the criminal justice system, and if they're found guilty of something, they should be afforded that ability to be to go through some sort of rehab, to be rehabilitated.
Yeah.
And I guess if you can be part of that and help somebody come back to the right side of the tracks, to use a horrible...
Exactly. You know. And, you know, not everybody that I'm working with is a serial killer, yeah. although I have worked with serial killers. But you know what? They don't interest me as much because they're not going anywhere,
okay.
rightly so. I'm interested in the person who is going to be going out and living amongst us because, you know, criminals, they're not a separate species.
No.
They are us.
We're all people, yeah.
They're your next door neighbour. They might be the member of your family.
Well,
you know,
not.
Yeah, well, they might be.
They could be. Yeah.
Do you know what? My very first job was working in a maximum security prison.
Really?
So I was working with men who had both raped and murdered women. And one of the prison officers, the senior officer on the wing where I worked, was convicted of 14 different counts of kidnap and rape.
Wow.
Yeah. And given several life sentences.
14.
Yes. So, you know, I learnt very, very early on, it's not them and us, it's just us.
Yeah.
It's just us. So offenders are members of our community. If they're going to go back out in the community, I want to know that they're doing it in a safe way.
Yes.
And that's incredibly rewarding aspect of the work for me, where you do get somebody who's motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they're not all serial killers. They're not all killers. I might be working on Monday with somebody who is a prolific sex offender.
Yeah.
Worries me greatly, gives me sleepless nights. On Friday, I might be working with somebody who's been convicted of shoplifting, and I'm obviously less concerned about them. It's very, very varied.
Yeah, yeah. So have you ever, to bring it back to the sort of TV angle and why we love this kind of thing, have you ever found a case that you've been working on? Again, I know you can't be too specific, but just in sort of generalities. Have you ever found a case as part of a series that you've been watching, or have you, you know,
I've worked
behind the scenes on TV?
I've worked with people who are, I'm not going to say famous because I think that that's unhelpful,
yeah.
but who are notorious.
Yeah, that's probably
And
the best.
So I watch numerous different documentaries about them.
Mm.
And some of them I think, wow, yeah, that's really interesting. That's spot on. Some of them I think, well, you've not got the full story there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting for me to hear different experts' opinions and different views, and sometimes views that are put forward are quite simplistic. We like to try and understand very extreme and inhuman behaviours in a simplistic way. We need to try
definitely.
And make sense of it ourselves.
Yeah,
we're quite driven
definitely.
To do that.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes some of the theories that people come up with kind of make me groan a little
yeah.
bit. For example, and I didn't work with this person, although a supervisor who I worked with did, Harold Shipman.
Okay.
Obviously,
mm-hmm.
notorious. And I've not got to work with him, and he's dead now, so I never will get to work with him.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to get into that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But many people, and I've seen this tons of times, have said, oh, well, he killed people because he wanted to reenact the peaceful death of his elderly mother, and that's why he chose elderly victims.
Mm.
Well, his mother was 43,
right,
which is younger than I am.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't like to think of myself as an elderly woman, and I hope that others don't think
not,
of me
no.
as that. Also, so I don't think that was the case. I think that makes us comfortable to think that was the case. It kind of makes, it's got intrinsic kind of logic to us.
Yeah, I see what you mean, yeah.
But the reality is actually something more sinister. He chose elderly women because they were easier to kill. They were not going to put up resistance.
No.
They trusted him implicitly. And people don't ask questions about elderly
of
women.
Course, yeah.
Whereas he had murdered younger people, and he'd been asked some pretty awkward questions. Mm-hmm. So killers make decisions that are often not, you know, to do with the relationship that they had with their mother and what we think of as, you know, highly psychological and, you know, Freudian. They make decisions that are rational and logical and very, very practical.
Yeah.
And for me, when I'm if I'm working with the police, for example, and I'm doing behavioural analysis, I've got to think like them. And sometimes that means being very cold, very cynical and very practical,
yeah,
and looking at the series of decisions that they make.
Mm-hmm. So do you ever worry about notoriety and obsession in terms of, we've got a lot more of these true crime things on TV nowadays and people,
yes,
watching things like that. Does that ever concern,
yes,
you at
I
all?
Do. And the research that's been conducted by Really, you know, gives me hope for the future and for human beings, really, because it shows that as viewers, there's this real sense of we want justice and actually we want to be part of that. So people going into careers in policing, criminology, some have even answered the questionnaire and say, you know, I want to become a judge.
Yes.
So it's about that sort of British sense of fair play, I think. So I think there are very few who would watch these documentaries with nefarious intent and think, oh, I want to learn how to become the perfect criminal. And if they do, I hope they realise that no matter how clever they think they are, there's a whole team of forensic scientists out there, mm-hmm, who have got very, very specialist knowledge. And when we put them all together, they're going to be far cleverer. So, yeah, I hope that it's a deterrent effect.
They're going to cover every avenue.
Yeah, but yeah, certainly people are becoming more forensically aware.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily always a good thing.
No.
But there is this interesting aspect of people who kill for notoriety, for fame,
yeah,
for their moment on the TV and on news channels and on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a very real phenomenon at the moment.
Really?
Yeah, I think it is. I think we've seen various, and we've been obviously struggling with the whole issues to do with gun crime in America and,
yes,
spree killings.
Yeah.
And now what you find is that people will post on YouTube.
Mm.
And people want to have their 15 minutes, not necessarily of fame. I don't think it's fame. It's about being taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to find a way to counteract that. And
definitely,
we need to be able to identify people who maybe are showing signs on social media that there's something very, very amiss here.
Yeah.
And being able to intervene early before it becomes tragic.
To try and flag that.
Yeah, but
early,
I think,
yeah,
social media and the social media age certainly brings certain types of problems with it. And we're only really just getting to grips with that. It's very, very new.
Well, that is the problem, isn't it? It is really hard for a lot of people to get their head around,
yeah,
that and just realise that that is actually the real world.
And crimes change. In the course of my career, when I first started, the internet was not a big deal. You know, I didn't even have a mobile phone when I started. I used to go to a phone box to call people. That's how ancient I am. I know you're laughing. It makes me feel really old.
No, I remember. But, I remember before that and all mobile phones and that, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen crimes change. So now I'm dealing probably 90% of the time with crimes that have either taken place via the internet or have started out on the internet.
Yeah.
That's how people are gaining access to others.
Mm.
So we've got to constantly be one step ahead, and that's a real challenge.
Well, you might have a little bit of help if I just go back to this research again and back to your sort of day-to-day. 6% have fed their love for true crime and gone into careers in psychology and criminology, with 5% going into forensic science because they've been watching true crime.
Mm.
Have you noticed an upturn in people coming in and saying, oh, I watched this and that's what sparked my interest in wanting to do this?
Well, now I'm in a strange position because now I appear on true crime documentaries.
Of course.
So I pop up quite regularly and I've noticed, well, certainly since joining Twitter, you know, I get a lot of mail. I'm going to be honest with you. Some of it is very, very strange indeed. But
people,
the stuff that really does motivate me and keep me going is I get a huge amount of posts from people saying, do you know what? I've watched you on TV or I've read about you in a magazine or what have you. And this is career goals for me. I want to be involved in this. Can you give me some advice? Can you point me in the right direction? And it's gratifying. And it's particularly gratifying because a lot of the posts that I get that's like that is from young women.
Okay.
And I think, yes, I was told right at the very beginning when I first started to talk about maybe having a career as a forensic psychologist that it was no career for a woman. Yeah, absolute nonsense. Most forensic psychologists who work in the prison service,
as you said,
are
yeah.
women.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, women being inspired to go into careers in the criminal justice system mm-hmm. or careers in the sciences, I just think is a fantastic thing. And I'm thrilled to be just even a minor part of that.
Definitely. Absolutely. So just to kind of wrap things up a little bit, we are here talking about Summer Nights of Crime.
Yeah.
What do you think people can expect from that? And how excited are you about it? Because you seem to love this kind of stuff.
I know
really.
What to expect from it because I've actually had the privilege of watching a few of the initial episodes.
Ah.
So I'm going to be binge watching the rest of them. Yeah, I am chichi. I am totally on the ball. So you can expect criminal confessions where you are going to be right there in the room with the police as they are interviewing their suspects. And you're going to get to feel like a part of that kind of psychological Mexican standoff that often happens. And we've got Hollywood homicides for those of you who like a bit of glamour. Now, we're not glamorising the crimes because what you're going to realise is that no matter how rich and famous people are, they still have the same often destructive emotions as others.
Yeah.
And they're certainly not above the law.
Maybe even to a heightened degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm probably most excited about Beyond Reasonable Doubt.
Ooh, sounds good.
So the first episode of Beyond Reasonable Doubt looks at a murder case that doesn't come to light until 34 years after the event. And without giving too much away, what is revealed about the body is pretty emotive.
Yeah. Yeah.
It
I want
gets
some spoilers
you.
Now.
No, I'm not going to give you a spoiler. You've got to watch it.
Come on.
But it makes me think, yeah, just how valuable this type of work is.
Yeah.
And it makes me very happy to know that somebody might be sitting on their sofa watching the old telly box. And it might be 34 years from now, something comes to light and they are a pivotal part in solving that crime. So that makes me feel good because it's a very emotional case. Yeah, it's going to get you, but I think that you've got to think that there's going to be positives. Yeah,
well, I'll definitely be having some of that then. So, Kerry Danes, forensic psychologist, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And for any listeners, Summer Nights of Crime starts on Really UK TV channel. You can get it on Freeview. It's on Sky.
You can watch
like
it
that.
On Catch Up as well.
On Catch Up on UK TV Play. That's that for
and
that.
And on
then.
The Really channel, fill your boots, crime fans.
Yeah. Thank you for your time, Kerry.
Thank you.